The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. It is Tuesday. Boy, this week is dragging on. It seems like we should be further along than Tuesday. Oh, and I miss our old Tuesdays, because on Tuesdays, Gotta Laugh is usually here. And I asked her, I gave her the chance yesterday, said, come on, just hang out with us tomorrow. But you know what? Her time is split. She's going to physical therapy, I think, every day. She's got issues with her hands and is working on it. I think she's getting better, but it's a time-consuming thing. She will eventually be back. She will. Just not sure when. So, but just want you to know that, you know, we haven't forgotten about her. She's still there. She's hating the voice-activated tweeting, but her hands are messed up. You know, I had a similar issue, I want to say about a year or so ago. All of a sudden, my hand, mostly my right hand, was just hurting horribly. And I thought maybe it's arthritis, because, you know, I'm getting older. And so I went to like every doctor you can imagine, and they did test after test, and turns out it is not arthritis. And as I had possibly thought it could be, because everything seems to come from my neck, it was coming from my neck. And the way I figured it out is because we do this, I don't even know what to call it. We call it the gallows, but it's obviously not the gallows. It is a contraption that goes over a door, like the door jamb on top. And it's like a pulley system. You attach weights to one end. You put a head brace, and it stretches you. It decompresses your neck. And we do it. David's got issues as well. So we do this like three times a week. And after a while of doing this and decompressing my neck, all of a sudden my hand stopped hurting. But I had numbness going up and down my right arm, all emanating from my neck. So I don't think that's Laffy's problem. I'm not sure what it is. Just so you know, we're still thinking about her. She's out there trying to come back. So she will be back eventually. The good news is we're back on YouTube, and I don't know why, because frankly, finished my copyright violation. I still have a copyright strike against me for, you know, something Brad and Desi played on a Green News Report 5 years ago. This whole YouTube thing is really screwed up. I've been doing a lot of research into it, and I do have I should actually share this article with you. There's a guy named Cory Doctorow who is kind of brilliant. I mean, he's a novelist and a nonfiction author, and he spans like everything. He's got to be a genius. Anyway, he wrote a piece on his blog about YouTube and their ridiculous system of copyright strikes. And so I reached out to him and I said, you know, I'm living it. This is before I knew that YouTube reinstated me. And I invited him to come on the show to talk about that, among other things. And we booked something, but it's next month, because this guy's kind of busy. So maybe I'll whip that out for one day later this week or next week and share it with you to let you know I am not alone. I am not alone. Don't be a horse junkie. No, I'm not a horse junkie. I mentioned that yesterday. So the horse that won the Kentucky Derby tested positive for some kind of steroid drug. Obviously, the horse didn't do it to himself. The trainer, who seems to be a little shady, did it. But the horse was now cleared to race this weekend in the Preakness. I don't understand what that's all about. But Donald Trump thought that this is something that he should weigh in on. And he did. And he badmouthed the horse and called him a junkie and spelled it wrong. Yeah. So anyway, that was just a comment from the chat room. But we are back live on YouTube. So let everybody know we're here. We're also still streaming on Facebook. Hold on. Let me go check and make sure Facebook is going. That we're firing on all cylinders appear to be on Facebook. Hi, Facebookers. And thank you, Drew Simmons, in the Facebook chat, who says congratulations on the YouTube release. And we're still on Twitch. Okay, there's Twitch. Hello. Hi, Twitchers. So we're on Twitch and we're on Twitter. So, yeah. So we're fully into into the 21st century, I think. Such as it is. Well, such as it is, I guess that's a good jumping off point, because the 21st century has really been shitty so far. Think about it. I mean, really, we got Donald Trump. I guess I shouldn't ding the whole century. We'll just say the 2020s, the roaring 20s have not been so great, although we got Donald Trump in the teens. So I'm correcting myself as we go along. But pandemic, Trump, you know, just there's just a lot of shit going on. And right now, I fear that our democracy is in peril. Today, the Senate Rules Committee is marking up the For the People Act. And you know about the For the People Act, because we've talked about it here. It's it was H.R. 1. Now it's S.1. It goes in conjunction with the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which really needs to be passed. And, you know, the Republicans are treating the For the People Act as if it is a partisan Democratic bill. It is not. It is something to that would enshrine in legislation our right to vote and things, you know, that go along with the act of voting. And we're looking at right now Republican efforts around the country. I think it's something like 43 states are enacting legislation to limit your right to vote. Now, they're telling you the opposite. They're telling you that it is, we're protecting your vote. Oh, thank you, Gorilla in the Mist. Yay. Thank you. Thank you. But YouTube has a super chat feature where you can, you know, donate money to the show that you're watching, and Gorilla in the Mist just did. So thank you for that. Anyway, they are introducing legislation in, I believe, 43 states to suppress the vote. First, you know, they did it in Georgia. And then they turned around and said, we're not suppressing the vote. We're making it easier to vote. And you know what I say to that?
Bullshit.
That's bullshit. It is not easier to vote, especially not if you're a person of color. It might be easier to vote under their new laws if you're a wealthy white person, but not if you're a minority. A black person in Georgia, because they came out in record numbers in 2020 and voted Democratic, so that the Senate is now under Democratic control. Thank you, John Ossoff and Reverend Warnock and the people of Georgia who came out and voted. So they want to make sure that doesn't happen again. So they're limiting the ease with which you can vote in Georgia. Here in Florida, obviously our elections in 2000 were fucked up, but they've gotten better to the point where Florida had a flawless election. It voted the wrong way, but, you know, the fact is the Republicans won, yet they're still. So there were no problems at the polls. There were no hanging chads or anything like that. They fixed, allegedly, the problems. And yet Governor Moore on death sentence decided, well, we need to tweak it anyway to make it better for the people. Again,
bullshit.
No, it's not better. It's made it more difficult to vote. And so Florida, now they passed those new laws, and now Texas is on it. And you name it. I think the number 43 is sticking with me. I believe there are 43 such states introducing this legislation. And that's what the For the People Act is supposed to protect us against. It's supposed to kind of level the playing field and give us back our right to vote. So it's in the Senate Rules Committee. They're marking it up, which means they're going through amendments and stuff. And of course, it's the committee, and it's evenly split, I believe, at 9-9. So most of the amendments that they're talking about, debating, as it were, but it's not really debating, end up in a partisan split, 9-9, which means the amendment does not pass. But I want to play for you just a couple of clips. Amy Klobuchar is the chair of the committee, and she's actually doing a pretty decent job. And here's just a snippet of her opening statement, but talking about what's at stake here.
The stakes could not be higher. The freedom to vote is fundamental to our nation. It's the bedrock of the system of our government. It was the founding principle of our country, and it has stood the test of wars, economic strife, and a global pandemic. We were reminded in a very visceral way on January 6th that it is up to us to protect against threats to our democracy, to ensure that our democracy succeeds. Our committee is doing important work in the aftermath of that horrific day, including with the bipartisan report that we will release this month. As we move forward, I can think of no more vital task than bolstering our democracy. And this bill was introduced to do just that by making sure our government works for the people.
That would be a beautiful thing if the government would work for the people. I have a slightly longer clip from Chuck Schumer showing you how important this piece of legislation is. Both Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell were there, and both spoke, I was going to say eloquently, but both spoke at length. Now, I know you might be disappointed, but I didn't pull any audio for Mitch McConnell. I listened to a little bit of it, and I thought, nope, just can't do it. Just can't do it. And frankly, I pulled more from Schumer than I wanted to, but what he was saying was kind of important. I may not play this whole clip because it runs about 3 minutes, but we'll see how far we get into it before I can't stand his voice anymore.
In the wake of the 2020 elections, deemed the most secure in American history by officials of the previous administration, former President Trump told a lie, a big lie, that the election was stolen.
Yep.
Without proof or evidence. The former president and his allies repeated this lie over and over again, poisoning faith in our democracy and fomenting an armed insurrection at the Capitol. And now, in states across the country, Republican legislatures have seized on the big lie to restrict the franchise and inevitably make it harder for African Americans, Latinos, students, and the working poor to vote. Here in the 21st century, we are witnessing an attempt at the greatest contraction of voting rights since the end of Reconstruction. Wow. And the beginning of Jim Crow.
It's true.
All across the country, Republicans no longer want to let the voters pick their politicians.
Nope.
They want to let politicians pick their voters.
Yeah.
Deliberately targeting all the ways that younger, poorer, and non-white Americans typically access the ballot. Iowa cut early voting by 9 days.
They did.
Restricted absentee voting.
Yep.
And will close polls an hour earlier. Montana ended Election Day registration and will no longer allow student IDs to be used as a primary form of identification.
Why?
In Florida, where African Americans and poorer voters rely on after-hours drop boxes, Republicans limited their use. In a landmark moment for the First Amendment, the press was not allowed to attend the governor's signing ceremony, except for Fox News. In Texas, Republicans advanced 2 voter suppression bills, 1 in each chamber. The original bill in the Texas State House specified that its purpose was to maintain, quote, the purity of the ballot box, unquote. A euphemism that dates back to the 1800s and was used as justification for Texas's sordid history of all-white primaries. The offensive language was eventually stripped from the bill, but much of the policy remained the same. in Arizona. A state representative defended Republican attempts to limit ballot access by saying quite succinctly that, quote, everybody shouldn't be voting.
Right.
Unquote.
Yep.
In the time since this committee met, the state of Georgia has made it a crime for volunteers to provide food and water to voters waiting in long lines at the polls.
Unbelievable.
I mean, my God.
And this just happened again.
Why aren't my Republican colleagues outraged by this?
Good question.
Why, when a few corporations had the audacity to put out statements opposing the Georgia law, did the Republican leader tell them to stay, quote, out of politics?
Yep.
And stop acting like, quote, a woke parallel government?
Unbelievable.
For supporting voting rights?
Yep.
What have we come to?
Okay, so that was more than I wanted to play from Chuck Schumer, but you can see why I kept it going. On the subject of the water, that was brought up as an amendment today in this markup of the For the People Act. Jane Mayer from the New Yorker tweeted, in Senate hearing on For the People Act, Senator Roy Blunt just opposed an amendment that would enable Good Samaritans to give water to voters stuck online. He suggests the water could buy off their votes. Seriously, that's the reason that they're enacting this legislation, this rule in states all around. They have it in Georgia. They have it in Florida now, that the only people who can give you food or water if you're stuck in line for 8 hours, which nobody should be, is the poll workers, that they're the only ones who can give it out because they're afraid that someone could buy your vote with a bottle of water. Seriously, if you're waiting in line and you are not, just to use an example, a Trump supporter, if a Trumper gives you a bottle of water, is that going to make you more likely to vote for Trump? Yeah, I didn't think so. Well, guess what? Now, they had, let's see if I can find this tweet. Here you go, from Ari Berman of Mother Jones. Every Senate Republican on that Rules Committee just voted against an amendment by John Ossoff of Georgia to the For the People Act that would have allowed volunteers to give water to voters waiting in line. Every single Republican on the committee said no. And you're wondering why we're so freaked out? In fact, that is the subject of today's show and the interview we have coming up. David Atkins has been on this program before. In fact, the last time he was here, it was because I came across a column that he wrote in Washington Monthly about the DNC. He's an elected member of the DNC. And basically what he learned since becoming an official member of the DNC is that they're basically FUBAR, that they don't have a clue. And it's pretty apparent. And I'm not just throwing that on the Democrats. I'm sure the same thing is true of the Republican, of the RNC, although I don't have anybody on the inside there. Anyway, this time, David Atkins wrote a blog post that our friend of the show, Dave Johnson, actually, let's see if I can find what he wrote about it. Oh, I have so much stuff open on this computer that it's hard to find it because there's no organization here. But he wrote something here. He said, Dave Johnson said, this is the most important thing you'll read this month. 2022, Republican states will refuse to send any elected Democrats to Congress. 2024, they'll refuse to certify a Democratic presidential win. The article at the Washington Monthly is titled, What Happens When Republicans Simply Refuse to Certify Democratic Wins? And that is the question that I hope Congress is looking at. Now, the For the People Act, which I thought was there to fend off any kind of this nonsense, actually doesn't deal with this at all. It just deals with the access, our right to vote. It doesn't deal with the Republican lies, cheating, and stealing as their way to win, because they can't legitimately win. Democrats outnumber Republicans nationally. I don't think a Republican has won the popular vote since maybe, I want to say Ronald Reagan. I do. Because George W. Bush, I know in 2000, didn't win the popular vote. I'm not sure about 2004, but I think he didn't win it there either. Donald Trump certainly didn't win the popular vote. They cannot win the popular vote. And that's why they're working overtime to try to fix our electoral system so that they can still claim a victory. But in doing so, they've broken democracy, or what we consider democracy here. So we're going to get to that. We'll speak with David Atkins in just a little while. There are a few other things that I want to tell you about, a few other items in the news. Some good news, some not so good news. And I'm not going to be able to get to all of it because there's a bunch going on. But let me read to you from my notepad. You know, I do what's news early in the morning, and then I keep a list of, you know, what I call the afternoon news dump, you know, stories that broke after what's news has already been done and is in the can, as they say. And so some of these include the Biden administration today approving the first U.S. large-scale offshore wind farm. It's going to be called Vineyard Wind. 62 turbines will be built off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. Interesting place. And I guess they're not complaining that their beautiful views are going to be sullied. This wind yard will generate enough electricity for 400,000 homes. It's the way of the future. A judge today dismissed the NRA's bankruptcy case, ruling that the National Rifle Organization, NRA, whatever it stands for, cannot use the bankruptcy code to relocate from New York to more gun-friendly Texas. So consider that a win, for the good guys. I'll take it. Let's see. A bad one. I guess I need to sound the buzzer here. This one goes to the Biden administration, who today named Rahm Emanuel ambassador to Japan. Really, Rahm? I guess the reason for that is to get him as far away from the United States as possible. Okay. The House Democrats today announced a vote next week to form a Capitol Riot Commission. And at the same time, they'll consider a measure to beef up security at the Capitol complex. That's good. And another bad one. And you can't not notice what is happening right now between Israel and the Palestinians stuck in the open-air prison known as Gaza. And it's bad. It's just really bad. It started over the Israelis were going to evict some Palestinians who are living in a neighborhood in East Jerusalem. They have been there for decades. Decades. And the Israelis decided they're going to put some, you know, right-wing religious Jews, you know, the crazy ones, in those homes. They're going to evict these families, right? They're going to start with four of them, but I think there are a couple of dozen families there now. And they've been there, I believe, since the 50s, right? So there have been near daily protests in the neighborhood. They've grown. Israel's Supreme Court was supposed to rule yesterday on a decision about evicting these four families from their homes in this neighborhood called the Sheikh Jarrah, I'm probably mispronouncing it, neighborhood, in favor of right-wing Israeli settlers. Well, the Supreme Court announced that it would delay its decision on the evictions because of the violence that's going on between the two sides. And so there have been shots fired in both directions, and it's escalated to the point where today a number of people have been killed, a number of Palestinians. There, I think, two Israelis were killed and 20 some odd Palestinians. And what's really kind of fucked up is the way our State Department is dealing with this. Oh, and somebody is calling. All right. You interrupted me, but so I'll take the call. Hi, who is this?
Roger in Minneapolis.
Hey, Roger. What's on your mind?
I hope to simply add some dimension to what you're conveying to us about the situation in Gaza and with regard to Israel.
Yeah.
I am of Jewish background.
As am
I'm
I.
Atheist,
as am I.
But I'm still very proud of my Jewish
heritage.
Identity.
Yep, got it.
And I am harshly critical of some of Israel's policies, mm-hmm. as are many people who favor peace and social justice in the world,
right.
who happen to be Jewish. I would love to see you get Medea Benjamin on sometime.
Oh, she's been on many times, yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess I missed that. Another person that would be wonderful to have on the show sometime would be Hanan Ashrawi, if you could ever reach her.
Okay, I don't know her.
But the subject of narrowing the notion of being critical of the policies of Israel to being anti-Semitic.
It's crazy.
It's frankly disgusting.
Yes, it is.
And it needs to be confronted at every angle.
I fully agree with you, Roger. And you know what? I'm sorry. I don't have a lot of time for this because I've got this interview
coming up.
Okay. But I thank you for the comment. I agree with you. I'm Jewish, also atheist. I am highly critical of Israel's actions, especially when dealing with the Palestinians that are in Gaza, which I consider an open-air prison, I'm in no way anti-Semitic. It's okay to criticize Israel, and you can do so without being an anti-Semite. My problem, what I was going to say here is, because I've only got like 2 minutes here, but I want to play for you Ned Price's reaction. He is the State Department spokesman. During the Trump years, he was actually on MSNBC, but let me play for you a clip from this press conference they had when they were talking about what happened, and it's devastating. So here's what happened. This is from Ross Story.
We're speaking of the principle of self-defense.
I'm asking if you think that the principle of self-defense applies to the retaliatory the airstrikes that they're conducting in response.
Matt, this is a very fluid situation. I would hesitate to comment on operations beyond the rocket fire that is clearly targeting innocent civilians in Israel. So I would hesitate to speak to specific operations that have just occurred. But the broader principle of self-defense is something we stand by on behalf of Israel and every other country.
Yeah, but do you think that an Israeli military response to the rockets coming in, a military response to the rockets coming in is covered by this broader rubric of self-defense, right?
Self-defense often does authorize.
Okay, what about the other direction?
Thank you, Matt. I want to ask you about East Jerusalem, but
here you go.
Talk about what you said about the principle of self-defense. Does that in any way apply to the Palestinians?
Good
question.
Do
they have a right to self-defense?
Yes,
they do. Do Palestinians have a right to self-defense?
Yes, they do, but he won't say it.
In broadly speaking, Saeed, we believe in the concept of self-defense. We believe it applies to any state. I don't think that I certainly wouldn't want my words to be construed as.
I understand. I want to ask you.
Okay, I'm going to cut it off there because then they go back and forth. The reporter points out that he said any state has the right to self-defense, and then he asks him, "Do you consider Gaza, Palestine, to be a state?" And of course, Ned Price can't go there because he's a spokesman of the State Department. The U.S. government stepped in it today in a big, bad way. Again, there are, I don't know how many people dead. The latest was, it was devastating. I mean, at least 28 Palestinians and 2 Israelis have been killed as tensions in Jerusalem escalated into exchanges of rocket fire between Israel and the Gaza Strip that lasted overnight into Tuesday. So this is a situation that's bad and getting worse. And the State Department is condemning Gaza and applauding Israel's. Let's see. Pressed repeatedly by reporters during a briefing on Monday, U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price refused to condemn Israel's killing of children with airstrikes on Gaza, offering evasive and mealy-mouthed responses that members of Congress slammed as unacceptable. Mark Pocan, congressman, said, "We cannot just condemn rockets fired by Hamas and ignore Israel's state-sanctioned police violence against Palestinians, including unlawful evictions, violent attacks on protesters, and the murder of Palestinian children. As an American Jewish person, I condemn Israel's actions. By the way, Israel doing such a great job vaccinating their people. You know who's not getting vaccinated? The Palestinians stuck in the Gaza Strip. It's wrong. By the way, I believe Benjamin Netanyahu is in court today. He's being tried on, he's been indicted on something like 33 counts, if I remember correctly. He's on his way out. And not that I have hope for whoever comes in behind him, but it's got to be better than him. All right. We're going to move on because I have this interview. David Atkins was on with me. We taped this earlier today. Again, I'm finding lately that I always try for a live interview whenever possible. But if the guest is only available to tape earlier, we tape it earlier. And such was the case today with David Atkins. And but it was a really important conversation. I think you'll agree. Joining us on the line today is David Atkins. He is a writer who you can find at the Washington Monthly, as is the piece that we're going to discuss today. He's also an activist, a researcher, an elected member of the DNC, which is what we talked about last time you were here, David. Thank you for joining us today. I always appreciate hearing from you.
Of course, happy to be here.
The reason that I got in touch this time is because of your new piece that's up at Washington Monthly. It's the headline basically says it all. What happens when Republicans simply refuse to certify Democratic wins? Wow. For those of us who are feeling a little complacent or just like, okay, everything's okay. Biden's doing better than we thought he would, and we're moving along, and this will stop you in your tracks. And it's actually something everyone should consider given what's going on around the country. In fact, I live in Florida, where our governor, who I lovingly call more on death sentence, just signed into law our own restrictive voter suppression laws, not because we needed them, because Florida, well, I guess he thought we did need them because Florida's election went so well in November. This is a distinct possibility, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, there's been some arguments about how much this is overblown or idle speculation, but I think it really isn't. There have been two major tracks that Republicans have been on, and one has gotten a lot of attention, which is, of course, the voter suppression track, where they're passing all of these state laws wherever they can to restrict the vote, particularly for young people and people of color, in the hopes of, you know, constraining the electorate so that they can rig the election in their favor. But there has also been this other thing that has been going on a little bit more under the radar that January 6th was just a part of, but that continues to happen, where every major elected official at a county level or at a state level who certified the Biden victory is being punished, threatened with primaries. They're getting death threats. They are getting, like I said, they're getting primaried, and they're also having, in some cases, laws passed to take the ability to certify the election out of their hands and give it to partisan bodies that will, in theory, be able to withhold the certification if they feel there is quote unquote fraud. And that's, you know, that's short cover for, you know, just like what they're doing with the so-called audit in Maricopa County in Arizona,
fraud.
Where
yes.
where they believe that, or where they claim to believe that basically anywhere with large urban Democratic voting populations is a center for fraud. The game plan here is simply to refuse to certify those counties, refuse to certify those state totals. And, you know, we saw some, you know, that's basically what Trump was asking the officials in Georgia to do.
That's right.
Right.
Yep.
And the end result of that, and there's a very specific strategy in doing that, right? There are deadlines by which these certifications have to take place.
Right.
And if a state fails to meet those certification deadlines. So, for instance, let's say you have a large Democratic population voting center in a big city. The state has taken that certification away, as they're doing in Georgia, and they're giving it to the partisan state legislature.
Wow.
The legislature claims that, oh, we think there's fraud here. We refuse to certify this county total. Therefore, we cannot certify the state total. Therefore, we cannot send electors. We've missed our deadline to certify. Oh, I guess what? The House of Representatives will have to decide this. The House delegation didn't get a certification on these electors. Therefore, it goes back to the conveniently gerrymandered state legislature. And because of, you know, gerrymandering and the generic geographic advantage that Republicans have in rural areas and exurban areas, what it functionally means is this, is that the House delegations would pick the president, which, of course, would hand things to the Republicans. Regardless of the state votes or the national votes.
Right. This is a scenario that could play out. And you know, it kind of stopped me in my tracks. Even though I had thought about it, you put it all into one convenient place. In fact, let me share one paragraph. I'm linking to the article from the blog today at NicoleSandler.com/5-11-21. That's where today's show will be posted, both the audio and the video and any links. And this will be there. But this paragraph reads, so what happens in 2024 if President Biden or Vice President Harris win the Electoral College, but local Republicans on county boards with majority Democratic votes refuse to certify the election? When state legislatures who have seized control of certification refuse to certify their state tallies? When a potential Republican majority in the House of Representatives refuse to certify the Electoral College tally? What happens when they refuse to certify Democratic wins in purple state Senate races, throwing control of the upper chamber into limbo and chaos? What happens if Biden-Harris wins the popular vote by 8 million votes and 30 electoral college votes, only to see Republicans in states like Georgia and Wisconsin decide that their GOP legislatures will send electors for Trump or Tucker Carlson or Josh Hawley instead? What happens if Democrats legitimately add to their lead in the Senate, only to see Republicans refuse to certify those tallies as well, keeping Republican senators in place for the next session? Those you could say on one hand, well, okay, that's a bit over the top, but have you seen today's Republican Party? They are fully capable of pulling this kind of stunt.
Yeah, and I think that is the flip. So, you know, I've described one of the many scenarios in which they could do this, and they could do this under the law, right? And they can claim they're observing the law and observing the Constitution in doing this. But the flip side is, okay, well, isn't this overblown? No, this is the problem.
Right.
Ever since the election itself in November, for the month afterward, you saw calls by Trump himself, and by a number of other Republican officials to refuse to certify the tallies, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the big lie was about. That's why 129, I think it was, House members in the Republican Party refused to certify the electoral votes. That was their rationale. We don't believe the numbers, right?
Right.
It was the January 6th coup was, as I say in the article, a physical coup designed to substantiate a legislative one, right? This was the game plan.
Right.
Ever since then, it was basically to deny the ability to count the Electoral College votes precisely because they wanted to contest the figures. Like, they just didn't believe that that the votes were what they were. Mm-hmm. Ever since then, everyone from Secretary of State Raffensperger to local county board certifiers in Michigan to the folks in Arizona who certified the results, every single one of them has been basically forced into hiding, gotten death threats, gotten primaries, gotten the ability to certify the votes taken away from them legally. The message is loud and clear, censured by their local and state Republican parties. The message coming down for all of these elected officials and their lives and the lives of their families threatened, the message is very clear. If you certify a Democratic win going forward, your life will be ruined. Your position will be removed. We will take this away from you, and we'll put it in the hands of either someone who will do what we want, which is not certify these things, or just put it in the hands of the state legislature to decide, you know, yay or nay on a partisan basis. I mean, that is literally what is happening. It is what has been happening in the GOP over the last 6 months since this thing has happened. And if you don't believe that they will go there, look at the history of the last 10 years. Look at all the places that they have gone that people did not think they would go to. They will absolutely go here if they're given the chance.
Without a doubt. And all you have to do is look at what's happened in Georgia, what happened in Florida, what's happening in Texas, and I believe in 43 states around the nation where they're putting in this repressive voter restriction legislation. And for instance, you know, in places like Georgia where their election went beautifully, the Republicans didn't like it because too many black people came out and voted and the Democrats won. So it doesn't matter that it was a legit, you know, democratically conducted election. They don't like the outcome, so they're trying to change it. And then, you know, I've been talking about my concept of opposite world for well over a decade now, but it's never been as blatant as it is now. It's up is down, in is out, left is right. Well, left is not right. Everything else, though, makes sense or doesn't make sense, as the case may be. I'm watching this morning the markup in the Senate Rules Committee on the For the People Act. Now, the For the People Act is a top priority for the Democrats because it would protect us against these crazy voter suppression bills that are popping up all over the country. But in listening to the way that the Republicans on the committee are twisting the what the bill is designed to do, it's more opposite world. It's like if you look at the mirror reflection of what they're saying, then you get some semblance of the truth. But they don't know the truth anymore. It doesn't matter. They're all about if we don't win, then it's not legitimate. And they're getting that from Donald Trump, who said over and over again during the election, the only way I can lose is if they steal it. So there's two possible outcomes. One, I win, or two, they win, but then it's fixed. It's a fraud. And they're going with that as their new mantra going forward. And you can't live like that.
No, you can't run a democracy like that. No. And part of the problem is there are ways to set up legal systems to prevent this sort of thing. This doesn't happen in other democracies, in part because they have a variety of systems set up to safeguard against it. They don't have partisans in charge of counting the vote. Most other democracies have judicial review boards, electoral review boards that certify, that stay far away from party politics. And they don't have this electoral college system. They also don't have these wide gaps between the election and swearing in that we do.
Right.
So, you know, once an election's held, that's who gets in and you don't really question it. And they don't have the Electoral College, for instance, which provides all of these potential roadblocks and places where Republicans can challenge, delay, deny, refuse certification. So there are a variety of things that we can do to strengthen the requirement that that electors be sent in line with the actual tallies, to require certification of the tallies, to require that there be, in fact, a certification of some kind, that you can't just refuse to certify. There's all sorts of things that you could do. You could add this to the HR1 package, or the John Lewis Voting Rights Act package.
Right.
But if we don't do it, we run this very, very significant risk of Republicans basically playing this game.
Yes.
And soon, 2022 for the Senate races, 2024 for the presidency.
Right. And no reason to think that they won't, which is what it's frightening, but it's staring us in the face. I mean, if you deny that it's a possibility, then you're not paying attention. So, David Atkins, in your piece at Washington Monthly, you write, there are ways of addressing these problems. You say the role of certifying elections can be taken out of the hands of either local or state partisan officials and given to independent judicial boards, electoral courts, and elections commissions. You also say those are possibilities, though I don't think any of those are in the For the People Act, are they? Or are these? No. And so they're
not that I'm aware of, because the things that we were addressing in the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act are ballot access issues, which are, of course, extremely important.
Right.
But I think this particular threat has only started to be coming on the radar because of what they've been, and not just out of paranoid fears, like because of what Republicans have been doing to change the laws around certification,
yep,
and to threaten all of these like minor local and state officials who have been certifying these clear wins for Biden.
Right, right. And the thing, so we're watching it play out. You can't deny the reality, although the Republicans try. You also say the Electoral College can be bypassed by the national popular vote. Gee, wouldn't that be nice? Ranked choice voting could also help. But that is saying that, you know, I've often said I'll debate a Republican, a right winger on my show anytime. I would love to. The problem is I can't find one who will agree to the, you know, stipulate to the facts. Sky is blue, grass is green. When they deny reality, you can't have a reasonable debate with someone who will not agree to the simple facts. And they won't agree to the simple facts. They tell you the sky is orange and the grass is blue. And they will stand by it and they'll fight to the death over it. And that's what we're up against right now. So, frankly, I don't know what the answer is. They have been, I think Donald Trump was only the spark to the flame. He gave them a game plan to follow, which is lie about everything. Thing, make shit up and say it's so, and then get a news alleged news channel to back you up. And how do you fight back against that? That's the position we're in right now, and it's frightening.
And on the rhetoric, of course, they will claim that they are just following a law, they're following the Constitution, they're just asking questions, they're ensuring the integrity of the vote, blah 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 blah. You know, they're all massive racist dog whistles, of course. Right. But yeah, and you know, they have, unlike the left, they have a massive propaganda warlords that will, you know, roll into play. And, you know, they will absolutely, as crazy as this seems now, right? Mm-hmm. When the time comes, they will absolutely justify it to their base with a massive propaganda.
Right. And the base is poised to take it. I mean, I saw a clip played ad nauseum on CNN yesterday where the reporter is talking to people at a, I don't know, some Trump event or something. And this woman is adamant that, you know, the election was stolen, and she knows it because she saw the ballots were stuffed under the desk and all the lies. And she said, of course it happened. I saw it on TV. OK, mm-hmm. Well, that, now we're really screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, their base is shrinking somewhat. But their base will absolutely believe it. So if you think that, oh, well, they would never do this because not even Republicans would go for that. Like, they like, no, that's not going to happen. In fact, their base is what's clamoring for this. You can kind of tell what is the what's going on with the Republican Party and with the voters generally at a partisan level, not just by public polling, which, of course, shows that the vast majority of Republicans don't believe that Biden won fairly,
which is amazing.
Who believe that the January 6th insurrection was justified,
or that liberals led it? It was Black Lives Matter, right, and Antifa, right?
Right,
right.
But even if the violence wasn't justified, that the motivations behind it were justified, and you know, you will also see it at the county central committee level, and we are seeing these and the state central committee level, and these are your sort of base partisan activists, and they are absolutely on board with censuring, destroying, and primarying every every single one of these elected officials that certified these votes.
Right. And
I mean, you know, that's what tells you what's going on.
Yes. And seriously, just look at tomorrow. The House, the Republican conference in the House is going to vote on stripping Liz Cheney of her leadership position. I'm no Liz Cheney fan on the issues. We are as diametrically opposed as two people can be. But I have newfound respect for her for standing up to the party who's telling her, do not be honest. Do not tell the truth. If you don't toe the party line, we're going to drum you out of town. And that's exactly what's happening. I give her a lot of credit for standing up and saying, hell no. There aren't enough of her, though. There's her and Adam Kinzinger. And I don't know that there's anyone else. Here's the question, though, David. Tomorrow, they're going to vote. I believe it is a secret ballot. I hear there's some rumblings in the caucus of people not happy about what's going on. Now, if they had to put their names on it, I have no doubt that it would be almost unanimous. But on a secret ballot, do you think there's any chance at all that she survives this and that there's pushback against the Republican leadership?
Well, that'll be really, really interesting to see. Yeah. I don't think so. I think that even on a secret ballot, they will decide to depose her. But we have seen before in these secret ballots the disparity between their publicly stated rhetoric and, you know, their private votes. And we see that more Republicans are, you know, secretly opposed to going down this path than they state publicly. But ultimately, at the end of the day, their incentives are, these are cowards or true believers. Like, and the challenge is they go where the structural incentives are. And right now the structural incentives are to refuse to concede any, to go fully anti-democracy and refuse to concede any wins by the opposition as legitimate.
Right. And I agree, although I disagree on one thing. I don't think it shows they're cowards, or what was the other choice you gave?
Cowards or true believers.
True believers. I think it's that they're afraid to buck, to go against Donald Trump. They're just power hungry megalomaniacs. They like the power. They're going to keep it at whatever cost, even if it means lying with every breath you take, standing up for one of the most heinous individuals, certainly the most ever to hold the office of president, to totally disavow any principles they may have ever had, and completely break our democracy. I mean, I do worry that we're going to get to this point. I think we'll see it a little bit next November. But in November of 2024, if this hasn't resolved itself by then, or we haven't been able to fix it by then, I really worry what's going to happen next. I don't even want to verbalize it because I think it gives it too much power.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, a lot of them are, of course, desperate to keep power. You see that with the Lindsey Graham thing. But I do want to come back to, you know, there have been officials widely quoted, you know, anonymously, of course. But, you know, I'm literally afraid that their families will be killed if they don't vote in certain kinds of ways. I mean, the right wing is very, 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 anybody who's been on the negative side of a Fox News firestorm knows that you basically, your phone blows up with death threats. Like, you know, if you're an elected official who betrays the Republican base, good luck to you. So yeah, there's certainly a large amount of, I want to stay in power and keep my office. There's a large amount of, I want to keep my career. And if I do this, I will destroy my career. And
well, I'll tell you,
I'm afraid for my families.
Yeah, my stepson's live-in girlfriend works at Katie Hobbs' office, the Arizona Secretary of State's office. Yeah. And they're all, you know, they have this fraud it going on now, and they have protective details for everybody. Katie Hobbs gets horrible death threats every day, but everybody in the office is a bit scared, as understandably so, because people are nuts. And I think they're getting crazier by the day. I think COVID didn't help, where we were all sort of shut in for a little over a year. And now nobody trusts anybody. And there's all these conspiracy theories out there. We're at our breaking point. And unfortunately, it seems like it's all focusing in on our electoral process. It used to be, well, you can trust the adults in the room. It seems like there are no adults in the room on the right anymore, except for maybe Liz Cheney. And how frightening is that of a concept?
Yeah. Right. And Cheney and Kinzinger, who are, you know, no friends of the left and no heroes, but Cheney and Kinzinger, they're two of the very few to stand up, and they are marked for elimination. Like, right. they're not going to win this battle for the soul of the GOP. That's not right.
No. So let me ask you this. You're an elected member of the DNC. Is this being talked about? I know that, look, the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, those were put in motion to correct against all the voter suppression tactics that are going on. But this is a whole different animal. This is the denial of reality. This is saying we will commit fraud. We will lie, cheat, and steal out in the open to keep the Democrats from taking office. Even if they, you know, legitimately win, we're going to make it so that they can't.
Yeah. I mean, if you recall our previous conversation about the DNC, it's not like the DNC is this massively organized thing where we're talking to each other all up and down the chain. So I can't really speak to that at the highest levels of the DNC. However, because I just don't know. But I think this is the beginning of a conversation, right? My piece sort of platformed off of other pieces that didn't go quite as far as I did with the, you know, specific scenarios. But this is a conversation that we just started having in the last week.
Yes.
And I think that it's going to be important to continue this conversation going forward and to address it at a legislative level, which, of course, brings us again back to Manchin and Sinema, right? Because ultimately, there has to come a point at which they believe that democracy itself is worth defending. And if they don't believe that the voter suppression laws are enough of an affront to democracy to be worth opposing the filibuster over and implementing HR1, I would hope that this particular threat might change their mind. And this particular threat is very real. And so I think this is an important conversation to have.
Oh, it is. And, you know, just great minds and all that. Joe Biden yesterday met with Joe Manchin. Today, probably as we speak, he is in a one-on-one meeting with Kyrsten Sinema. Either they will get what he's saying, and hopefully he's convincing enough and makes the case, like, what the hell are you doing? You need to stand with us, or we're sunk. Or this is the end of democracy, and they have a proverbial come to Jesus moment, or we're screwed. The end of your article, I don't want to give anything away, but you just say everything we're seeing from the Republican Party is pointing directly to this as not an exaggeration in 2024. You're not giving us solutions. I guess that's up to us. And Manchin and Sinema, which also frightens me as much as putting any faith in Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger. I worry. It comes with the territory these days, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, look, we needed to pick up more seats in the Senate than we did. The 50-50 Senate, basically, which we were lucky to get because of the hard work of the activists in Georgia and the voters. But the right. I mean, it puts us on a knife's edge where we are at the liberty of Manchin and Sinema and basically even one senator who wants to stand up. So in theory, 2022 looms as an election where we'd have to really fight against historical trends, but it would be very helpful to give ourselves more cushion in the Senate.
Without a doubt. Well, I noticed I'm not the only one who picked up on this article. I saw a few people, influential people, retweeted it. So it's getting around. You're making a statement here and people are picking up on it and going, holy shit, this is something we do need to get on. Everyone needs to be concerned about it. It's not hyperbole. It's not exaggeration. This is a reality given where we are, the political climate in this country today, and something's got to give. And I guess it's up to us to fix it, because if we sit and wait around, we're going to wind up with Republicans taking our votes from us.
Yeah, and at a broader level, of course, you know, while their voter suppression efforts, if they were to win elections via voter suppression, then you functionally have an apartheid government. Uh-huh. But in theory, you can wait that out and beat them the next time or whatever. If this happens, you're looking at the worst kind of civil conflict. You're looking at basically not just the figurative destruction of democracy by by unjust voter suppression and apartheid governance, you would literally be looking at violence and civil conflict. So we really have to do whatever we can to head off this eventuality.
Without a doubt. Everybody needs to read this article. Again, it will be posted on the blog today. I will tweet it out and Facebook it and do all that stuff, too. The article is at Washington Monthly. It's called What Happens When Republicans Simply Refuse to Certify Democratic Wins. And yes, it is a distinct possibility, and we can't let it happen. David Atkins, as always, thank you for writing another really thought-provoking and important piece. I so appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. David Atkins. You can follow him on Twitter also at David O. Atkins. And with that, we come to the end of the Tuesday edition of the show. Tomorrow's Wednesday. I think we're going to be speaking with John Barry, who wrote the book about the 1918 pandemic, so we can find out the parallels and the differences and how they got out of it and see if it's following the same path, see what history can teach us. And with that, I'll say goodnight. Have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening, everybody. Take care. Be good. Get vaccinated. Okay. Bye.